This is Fidencio Marbella with the Melrose Park Public Library. We're today speaking with J.W. Scott of Bensonville, Illinois. I'm also here with Heidi Krug, also of the Melrose Park Public Library. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Why don't you tell us when and where you were born?
I was born in Mississippi, 1931. I went in service November 28, 1950, and I served in the Korean War. I did occupation in Japan, and returning to the stateside, I was shipped to Texas, Fort Hood, Texas, but tank commander, and that's where I was discharged from.
Okay, why don't you tell us a little bit, what were you doing before you joined the service?
Picking cotton. I worked in Mississippi at all kinds of jobs. I want to mention, my parents was, you know, they was born slaves, and as I growed up, you know, I worked with, helped support the family, and my father, he was killed in service in 1945, and then I went in service in 1950.
Did you have any other family members that served in the armed forces?
My son, he served in Vietnam.
Yeah. So all three generations served our country.
Right. He also lives in Rochester, Minnesota.
Okay, why don't you tell me how you ended up in the U.S. Army? Were you drafted or were you enlisted?
I was drafted. I was U.S. Yeah.
And what year was that?
I went in November 28, 1950, and in April I finished my basic training and was on the front line in Korea the last of April.
They didn't give you very much time, did they?
No.
Now, where did you have your basic training?
Camp Chaffee, Arkansas. And when he sent me to the front line, the line was in Seoul, right across Seoul. That was the first combat I seen was in Seoul, Korea.
Okay. Let's go back a little bit to your basic training. What was that like? Was it a big adjustment for you to serve in the Army from your civilian life?
It was. It was a lot different. But, being from Mississippi, we had some problems too. And after I went into service, I took basic training, which was the foundation. But one day in combat, you learn more than you do the whole time in basic training.
Now, back then, was the Army still segregated, or was that breaking down by then?
It was being integrated. In fact, I was one of the first men of a fellow from Pennsylvania. We was the first two blacks went into 1st Cavalry Division. And believe me, they was glad to see us. I said, it was a lot of problems in Korea at that time. Okay. That's why I went so fast.
Okay. So you didn't have a lot of problems with the other men in your unit? Or?
I didn't have any problem until I got back to the States.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. After I got back to the States, I had a problem because after I was sent to Texas, and I'd be riding with some of the fellas was in combat, and they wouldn't even sell them gas in Texas because we'd be in the back seat.
So after you served your basic training, where did you go from there? Did you go straight to Korea, or?
I went to Incheon, Japan. Yokohama, Japan.
Okay.
And I was there, that's just outside of Tokyo.
Okay.
And then from there, straight to the front line in Korea.
Okay. Now, what was it like leaving the U.S. to go to Japan? It was a boat that you traveled on?
How long a trip was that? 14 days, Joan Mitchell. Yeah.
And what was that like? Had you ever been on a big ship like that before?
No, I hadn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that like? Can you tell us
about that? Well, it was scary. I mean, you didn't even think about, you know, the boat ride when you know where you're going.
And then you ended up in Yokohama, Japan.
Yeah. Okay. There's a camp right out of Yokohama, where we processed to go to Korea. Okay. And it was 3 days down to down the Yellow Sea down to Korea.
Okay, so then you went from Japan to landing in Korea.
Yeah.
Where did you land in Korea?
Incheon.
Okay, you were part of the Incheon landings there?
It wasn't invaded. No, okay. Invasion, no. But I went to Incheon.
Okay. Then what was that like in Korea, your first impressions of landing in Korea?
Well, actually, you know, straight on the front line, it was scary.
Okay. And what unit were you with?
I was in with the 1st Cavalry Division.
Okay. And what kind of weaponry did you have? What were you on tanks or were you
infantry? I was in infantry.
Okay.
1st Cavalry Infantry, okay. As you'll see in the paper here.
Okay.
I was in hand-to-hand combat.
Okay, so you went straight into combat from Incheon.
Went straight to Seoul, and that's where the front line was.
In Seoul?
Yeah.
Okay. So you got there after the North Koreans invaded the South already. You were sent there
after after that. What happened, when I was called up, they had pushed American soldiers. American was above the 38th parallel. They had pushed, it was pushing us all the way back off the island, and that's why I went so fast, because they needed people there right away.
Okay. So, give me your first impressions of going into combat. What was that like?
Well, naturally, I said, it was scary. Mm-hmm. And it was always, even when we got arrested, and they said, you have to go back up front tomorrow. Okay. Well, so many going, it's not coming back.
So how long were you there on the front lines?
At one time, as long as I stayed on the front line, at one time was 3 months. They usually pull you back after a month and let you put somebody else in front of you, so you can rest. It was every day. We had the packs on our back. We had it rained just about every day. We was over the mountains. You were steady being shot at. And what can I say? What was it like? And you actually, how we wound up going back to Japan to do occupation, because just about eliminated my outfit, the 1st Cavalry at that time. You pull back up to strength today and said the company, you have 214 men this evening, you might have 50. It was just that bad. It was war. And all you see every day was trucks steady hauling back. We had, when they could get to us, we got good food. But a lot of times you see people's coming to bring you some food and hit a minefield. Well, most of the time you had the Koreans, the Koreans had the packs on them that bring your food up the mountain, because couldn't no truck get up there. If they had a mine or something, then you're lost. So, and then we had sea rationing, and sometimes, the whole time, and I tell the kids now, how great it is just to see electrolyte. The whole time I was in Korea, I didn't even see I did go back to Seoul once for a rest, and I got to see an electrolyte. Running water. We didn't have running water. And when you wasn't being shot at, you'd take a bath in a creek if you could, find one. Your washroom, you just had to dig a hole.
Pretty primitive conditions for our frontline soldiers. Like,
yeah. And there was a time we was going to take the field. I know you heard about Bloody Baldy. It's probably in this book. So They told us that we, for us to take the hill, is one, we stopped on one hill and laid down a base of fire. So after we did that for a while, it's about 3 o'clock in the evening. They said, well, we're going to change, we're going to, yes, to continue to lay down the base, the base, you know, shoot into the hill. We had artillery and mortar and everything, land, you know, hitting it. So then they pulled another company through us, said, you just continue to do what you're doing. They're going to pull through you. They're going to go up and take the hill. So I guess it's about night, my first night, and they pulled through us. After they got down in the mountain, after they got down in the valley, rather, they called for ass crack on that mountain. That's a mountain called Bloody Baldy, well, a hill called Bloody Baldy. So when they called for the stray ass crack, 90% of those peoples in down in the valley waiting to go up on the hill was deep, got killed. So now they said that we had to go. By that time, it must have been about midnight, and we had been pounding that hill all day. And you could be close to a person as I am to you, and you couldn't say anything because we was all mixed up. And because if you said something, you find out you're American, you're gone. And the next morning, we got up. It was a head here, an arm here, a leg. And then the Chinese, they had... Well, what I'm saying, you know, it was in Korea, but that was Chinese, actually, we was fighting. And they had tons in that hole, and by all that ass cracks and stuff, it was, some of them was buried in that hole. So we just had to, you know, just, we had to hold that position for a while. We just had to roll the body down, the leg down, the body to, you know. And, ooh, that smell, all that, you know, all that blood and stuff.
Now, what were your responsibilities with the unit that you were in?
Well, I was a platoon leader.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was it like leading men in combat then?
It was great. And the men, you know, they had a lot of confidence in me because I wouldn't ask the men to do something that I wouldn't do. And to go back, I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. But even when I got this Bronze Star, and you see some of the stuff on there that happened. We had been fighting, night and day. So we went on this patrol. It's out in the front line. It's up by Pumwinjon, up on north of the 38th parallel. So the platoon, the lieutenant, he said one squad out in front is what they call a milgram because we didn't think we were going to run into any resistance. So we all stayed at the bottom of the hill. So after we got stayed there for about, maybe 15, 20 minutes, one of the guys came back and said it was something in that village up there. So the second lieutenant, he told me, he said, well, I know y'all been going, this, your nerves is all cracked up. And it was a lot of guys just cracked up. He told me, say, you take two squad and go up there to see what's going on. So I took my sister with me right down, and we walked straight down right into it. And I had a set up a machine gun, so we had to come up on this side, one on that side, so we could have, crossfire. So after we got it must have been near 100 feet from them, they opened up on us with everything. So I had a carbine, and it was about maybe 100 feet from me, and every time I pulled it up, it would snap. But it wasn't a gun. See, what happened, we had been in the rain, and the carbine, they had a magazine on, it wasn't feeding. And the guy was about close to me as you, he got shot right through the head. And all the other guys, they was firing when they could. And I took that, and you see here what I'm saying, I took the automatic rifle, what he had, because he had an automatic rifle with him. And I actually took that gun and that bell burned just like paper. And I had all the other guys to get out, and I stayed there alone and laid down a base of fire till after they got out. Then they shot over my head, and they was just had the rice paddy walls just all over my head, like this and down, because you didn't have much cover. And I got all those guys out, except that one was next to me, he had got killed. And that you couldn't even touch that rifle. I mean, it just burned like paper because I was speeding it so fast, you know, you're supposed to shoot it and burst.
So how many men were in your platoon that you brought up there?
I brought in 18, it was 18, nine, two squads, with nine men, it was 18. And they estimated in that perimeter there, it was about 400 people that we were up against. About 400.
These were Chinese?
Right, and then I tried to call down to the bottom of the hill to get some help. And they had jammed our frequencies. And I couldn't even make a contact, you know, they could hear fine, but we couldn't even call them, let them know what was going on. And then after I got back, we called in napalm. And that was a beautiful thing for them, because they come in, the planes came in with all that, and it was just a ball of fire across there. Yeah.
Now, this is near,
it's in here, yeah, you see it all here. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And what year was that?
This was that was in 51. Yeah. Yeah, what did I do with that other paper? Oh, yeah. It's all right here.
So just a little bit of background, I guess, on Korea. To start with, the North invaded the South.
Yeah.
The U.S. sent troops there to fight back
the North. Yeah, we're fighting with the South.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then at what point did the Chinese enter the war?
Well, the Chinese, they were supporting the North Korean all time. In fact, I really think that they was behind the whole thing.
So after you got yourself and your men back down off that hill, what happened next?
Well, that's what I said. I reported, they called in for the abstract.
Right.
And they bombed it in napalm. It's napalm, you know. Put a lot of that, and then, the casualty was real heavy, you know, after that. Yeah.
So then after you came back down and the airstrikes came in, what happened next?
Well, it was the same thing. I mean, you're fighting. No, we didn't want to go nowhere. We were set up we was on patrol at this time. We pulled back to our original position. See, on the front line, we have I don't know what they're doing now, but we had a line all the way across Korea. And the Thailanders, they was next to us, you know, to my unit. And every unit, and it's like if you get ready to move, then you can't, you know, you have to feel permission, somebody to hold that position so they don't get behind you. So after we was on the patrol, then we would, you know, pull back to our regular position. It was somebody holding our position while we was on patrol.
So how often would you do these patrols?
It could be any time, because sometimes we would just, they might send on a patrol out to catch enemies, I mean, just for information. So, you know, it wasn't no certain time.
Were they usually at night that you had to do these patrols?
Some at night. If you're going to go behind the line, trying to infiltrate behind the line, that was night. Their line. Now, in the daytime, you just go on a regular patrol, you know. And usually when you got a front line, but usually it's called reconnaissance. You know, you go up for information.
Like, what kind of information were you looking for when you go out there?
Well, like what I just said, I mean, this was a milk run. We didn't think it was in there. We're just checking to see what was there.
Okay, just to see where the enemy was?
Right, at that particular time, but you can be for any reason.
Okay. What were some of those reasons that you'd go out? Can you tell us about that?
Well,
did you go out for, like, prisoners, or?
Well, if you go out to try to get at night, you go out to try to capture a prisoner for information, yeah. Okay.
Did you ever
but actually, yeah, but look, actually, You really didn't want him. So.
Did you ever capture any of them?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, what was that like?
Well, it's a long story. And like, one night we was on, on the line, like you and your partner, you and the foxhole, like I said, you, somebody awake 24 hours a night, a day, you know, you sleep an hour, I sleep an hour, and we do that. And we had a Chinese come up, woke a guy up to surrender. Yeah. Yeah. And he had a fit. He went into scared him to death. Yeah.
So you didn't actually have to go out and get him.
One incident that happened, yeah.
He was like a deserter from the Chinese.
No, yeah, he wanted to give up. You know, he wanted to surrender. He was tired of it and stuff. And there were so many people's, some was, you know, a lot of people got hit. And just so much blood and stuff. And you always had your medic with you. And they would, you know, they had drugs and stuff. And you had, when they get to you, you got liquor ration, cigarette ration. I started drinking a lot of liquor. But I never, that's something I can say, and I thank the good Lord, I never had a reefer, and it was everything plentiful right there, nothing. But I did drink my share of liquor.
Now, after serving the front lines for how many months, you would get some R&R on occasion, or?
Sometime you go on the front line, you stay a month. Sometime you stay 3 weeks. It depends on the demand, how much, I mean, they need you.
Then when you weren't on the front lines, where did they send you?
Well, when it's on the front line, you would still be in Korea.
Right.
But somebody else would be in front of you. Somebody else that would hit before you. Now, you could be fighting anywhere you'd be. It was drop, you know, airstrikes, mortar rounds come in, artillery or something like that. You know, you didn't have to be on the front line for that.
Now, how long was your unit there before they withdrew you?
They was there when I joined them. I don't know, they had been there from the beginning. And like I said, I went in 50. And I went in service in 50, and I joined the 1st Cavalry in April. And we was there about a year, about the next March, with about 11 months.
So after the 11 months were up, where did you go? What was your responsibility after you left Korea?
Well, actually, when I left Korea, they had what they call rotation to come back to the state. But when I left Korea, they had froze rotation. So I did occupation in Japan on the island of Hokkaido. That's up on the Chinese border. And they was training on one side, we was training on the other side. That's the northern island of Japan.
Now, what was your occupation duty like? What were your responsibilities while you were there?
Oh, there? Yeah. Well, I would do too much. Never took ski training. It was a lot of ice and snow up there in till rotation time. Okay.
Now, did you meet any of the Japanese civilians while you were there?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I met Japanese before I went to the front because when I first got to Japan, yeah.
Now, what was that?
And they was, they Japanese helped us. In fact, Japanese units happened in Korea. Yeah.
I mean, what was that like just so soon after World War II? Was there any bitterness from the Japanese civilians or at all or no?
No, they treated us real good. Yeah, real good.
Now, you mentioned ski training. What was that for? Why did you have to train to fight for skis?
Well, we just took, I guess they just found something for us to do. And, there was so much ice and snow up there, and we took, ski training when we go out training, and by the way, I was in 2 earthquakes up there.
What was that like?
Well, the first one, we had It just came in. It was in the chapel for lunch, and they started to tell everybody to get in the streets when it started, when it's a little rumble, you know. And you go out, everybody went out in the streets, and you know, you see the building and everything going, and you going this way trying to stand up. And the second one, I had been to town, and I hadn't had me a few drinks, and the beer started going from side to side. And I got him so inside the bed, and I just got him laid on back down. Yeah.
So after you finished your occupation duty in Japan, where did you go?
They sent me, well, I came through Seattle, Washington, and from there to Fort Knox, Kentucky. And Fort Knox, Kentucky, I had a 30-day leave. And I went to Mississippi, and then I went back to Fort Knox. And from there, I was sent to Fort Sam Houston, Texas. And I was there for about a month. And then they sent me to Fort Hood, Texas. And I was there until I got discharged.
When was that?
That was in 52, yeah, the last 52.
Okay. Why don't you tell us, do you ever still keep in touch with any of the men that you fought with in Korea? Do you ever have reunions or anything like that?
You know, no. And when I left Korea, there's one guy one guy that really was in combat. There's a lot of people who go to the army, but it's a few people in combat. And you don't find, how many people do you find now that's alive with these medals? And I didn't get a scratch. The good Lord took care of me. Not a scratch.
All right. Can you tell us a little bit, how were you presented with the medal? Was there a ceremony or?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Tell us about that.
Yeah. They just had a ceremony, you know, they had everybody, you know, out there. It was other people's got to, and everybody, you know, that's get hit gets the Purple Heart. That's just for getting hit. And they awarded.
Now, this was in Korea? They had the ceremony?
Yeah. No. This is in Japan. Japan. Okay. Yeah.
Now, who actually recommended you for the medal? Was it your commanding officer?
Yes. Yeah.
What was his name? Remember?
Oh, I can't think of it now. Yeah. But it's in the book here.
What were your feelings like when your commanding officer recommended you for the Bronze Star? Were you surprised?
Well, actually, I tell him the same thing that I'm telling you, you know. He's talking about how many people I see. But I wasn't even looking at that. It wasn't my goal, you know, just saying I'm going to save you. It's to save, I had no other choice. So I did what I had to do to save myself.
So what were your feelings like during the ceremony when they actually awarded you with the Bronze Star?
Well, I know it's, actually I was real proud to have it, but you know, and that's about it.
Now, how was your adjustment after you left the Army? How was your adjustment going back to civilian life? Did you have any problems going back to civilian life after fighting in Korea? Some of the things that you had seen?
No, I didn't. Because actually, after I got out of service, they had a veteran commission over on 47th and Cane Drive, and I went there for a job, and they asked me, you know, interviewed me, and they said to ask me what kind of job I wanted and so forth, and I told them, you know, I just wanted a job, so they asked me if I wanted to go to the post office. I said no, and then they asked me several places, At the time Campbell Soup was made, they was working a lot overtime and stuff, so I went there and started working. Well, I worked 37 years there. Well, I went in my own building.
Now, after you were discharged from the Army, you went back home to Mississippi initially?
No, my family was there. I didn't stay back there at all, no. And then pretty soon my family moved to Chicago.
Okay. Any other stories or anything in general you might want to share with us about your time in the Army? Your overall impressions of serving?
Well, I don't know what you're asking, you know, if I would do it again. You know, I didn't ask for it then at that time, but, you know, I did what I had to do, and whatever happened, you know, I do what I had to do.
Now, do your wartime experiences ever affect your life today? What you learned, what you saw?
I think about it, and, you know, like I see some stuff going now, and I think about, you know, how much different it was at that time. And for instance, in Chicago alone, you notice the paper, you say, how many people that, you know, that got killed now in the war? Well, you got more people that get killed in Chicago than you did in the war now. See, at that time, and if you mean, I know you have the figures, it was just studied every day. And you couldn't even count them for so many. And there was just study hauling them back. And the studies were really buried all over everywhere. And now I understand that you have to get permission if you want to do shoot the same thing. But if there, it's you or them. Yeah. And you weren't even allowed to go to a washroom or go to do anything without you carrying your weapon with you. So we wasn't playing, it was war.
Not like today.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing your memories with us.
Okay.
This is J.W. Scott of Bensonville, Illinois.
Yes.